G'day mate, how you going? This is Adam O'Brien and welcome to Fandom Podcast Network, here where we enjoy all forms of fandom. Well, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, I bring you Lethal Mullet Podcast, an Australian look at B-grade action films from the 1980s. That's right, going back to that beloved time when we had Chuck Norris on almost every Friday night here in Australia, kicking, punching, and shooting his way to the top, alongside Jean-Claude Van Damme, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the likes of many of the others that came after him, Sylvester Stallone. We even look at some of the heroes you may not know, all here on one Fortnite with Podcasts here on the Fandom Podcast Network. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can check it out also on Podbean if you've got the Podbean app. Make sure you check it out. Now, let's get into the episode here on Fandom Podcast Network.
G'day mate, how you going? This is Adam O'Brien here at Lethal Mullet Podcast live on Fandom Podcast Network. On tonight's episode, we have part three of our look at John Carpenter. And in the last episode, we looked at my thoughts on the greatest of his 1980s films. But tonight, the one, the only co-founder of this here channel, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel, is here to chat about his love of John Carpenter. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode looking at the amazing work of the director, John Carpenter. But before we get into that, here's where you can catch up with the rest of Fandom Podcast Network and how you can get in contact with us.
All right, before we get into the episode tonight, here's where you can catch this show and many others like it on Fandom Podcast Network at fpnet.podbean.com, which is our main master feed. You'll also catch the actual show itself on the Podbean app. It's one of the greatest ways to check out the show. Also, if you like all the shows, you can catch them at all these different places where you can catch podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and of course, Google Play if you're an Android user. Now, also, on social media channels, you can find us on Twitter at FanPod Network, and on Facebook, you can catch us at Fandom Podcast Network's page there at facebook.com/FandomPodcastNetwork. If you want to catch us on the email lines, email any ideas you have that the show might be able to cover, any other films you think that have been fantastic, you can catch us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host, Adam O'Brien, at obpopculture on Twitter and, of course, on Instagram as well, same handle. And don't forget to catch me on my other show, The Fantha from Down Under, a fortnightly look at Star Wars from Down Under on Fantha Tracks Radio or FanthaTracks.com. And also check out the great shows that I'm doing here on Fandom Podcast Network's Couch Potato Theatre, where we look at Mad Max with Maximum Couch Potato, and also our brand new show, The Spicing Guild, looking at the adaptations of Frank Herbert's Dune. Now, let's get into the show.
I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and joining me all the way from headquarters of Fandom Podcast Network is the one, the only, let's see how long we can do this name for. Are you ready? Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. Pal, how are you?
Oh, good, man. That never gets old. I appreciate that. How are you, brother? My brother from another mother, Down Under.
I'm doing good, pal. And I tell you what, we're burning the wick at both ends.
Oh, I bet. Yes. Now, wait. The literal wick or the John Wick? Because I'm doing
well. I tell you what, we'll find out in number three. And I tell you what, we're all interested to see exactly what's going to go on with Wick and where it's going to go.
Question for you: is it coming out the same time it is here, May whatever it is, 16th, 17th?
Not 100% sure exactly when it's coming out here because I haven't seen any material out here on the actual date yet, which kind of worries me because it could end up being like John Wick 2, where we were at least, I think it was about 5 months apart.
Yeah, I remember they were originally going to release it on video or something, and you guys are like, no, and you raised a hell, and they finally released it. But if it releases around the same time, I'd like to get your your input on it, because we're obviously going to be doing a special. So, because I'm calling it right now, we're doing a special on the Fandom Podcast Network for John Wick, Chapter 3, Parabellum.
And what's interesting about it, too, is, of course, we're talking about a time where a third John Wick is coming about, but there's also the moving of that creative team into the Highlander universe. And do we know yet whether it's actually going to be grounded down to a series of films, or is it some rumor of a TV show?
The latest thing I saw article-wise from Chad Stelhesky when he was asked about it was that now he's considering a possible TV series. To quote him, he doesn't want to F it up. He's passionate about this mythology, and he doesn't want to mess it up. He wants to do it right. Originally, it was a movie or a trilogy, but now he's looking at the possibility of a TV series. Now, there's already a TV series of a John Wick series coming out sometime, called the Continental, I guess, and it's about a younger John Wick and that underground from years ago. So I don't know if it's going to fall under that same production company or what have you, but I'm all about it being a TV series because it allows you to more time and more screen time for Highlander as far as I'm concerned. So,
oh, without a doubt. And it's such a rich mythology, I think, is the big thing about that universe.
They've done that already with two films, and it's already going to happen with a third one, you know. And I was talking to Kyle about this in a culture clash. And the first one, you got the gold coins. The second one, you got the marker. And I think there's a third thing. If you watch the newest John Wick trailer, or the only one right now, he's got this rosary thing with something on his wrist that he's holding, and you see it inside that hollow out book. And then you see him holding it when he is in several scenes, like when he's talking to Angelica Houston's character, and I think he also has it too, and he's talking to Halle Berry's character. So I'm wondering if it's like a get out of jail or I'm safe, like it's a traveling continental holy ground thing, like he earned because he was able to do like the ultimate impossible task. So I'm only speculating here, but if you go back and watch that trailer, you'll see he's got that. So I'm curious what that means.
What I love about the area is, again, such an ensemble cast of not just the actors themselves, but the actual characters have become just as popular as the people playing them.
Yeah, I'm really, really curious to see what they're going to do. But we're here to talk some another John, though.
We are. John Carpenter, which we've been covering the last couple episodes. And, of course, you can see my love of it. We've had Blair on the show as well previously, chatting about his love.
That was a great show, by the way. You guys did a great job covering his films.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate that. But we want to see what Kevin loves about this amazing director.
And I just want to remind you guys again, it's Adrian Barbeau. Adrian Barbeau. Yeah. You guys forgot Adrian Barbeau.
How did we forget? But what's great about John is obviously not only his influence on our pop culture, but his influence on filmmakers as well, because he's come out at a time where he uses the budget so effectively on each movie. So if we go all the way back to Humble Beginnings, right through to all the great films in the 80s that he did, you're going to find that this is somebody that gets the minimal budget and pushes it as far as it will go. And of course, teaming up with the likes of Kurt Russell, and of course, some amazing character actors as we go through the series.
One of the things that I always have respected about John Carpenter that I always look forward to when I see his movies or rewatch his movies, and you know, I don't know if this is a part of him that realized he could save money on his pictures, but the fact that he's a musician and he scores his own films is really unique thing to see a director do. And it's always got that signature John Carpenter sound. And I love it. Absolutely love it. He seems to, you know, it's John Carpenter when you hear it, but it seems like each one's different for each film. And it feels like it always, you know, sets the mood of what you're watching.
Oh, I think so too. I think to me, he's a lot like Tarantino in that way, is that you've got an actor who's, a director who's able to basically have a voice no matter what movie he's making, something that's really powerful, something that's really, able to push the boundaries, whether it's musically, drama-wise, or just how he uses actors And you find that too with him. I think, you know, whether it's this movie or movies that he's done with actors maybe one time, even They Live is a perfect example of taking somebody that may not have the experience of, say, working on film like a wrestler with Roddy Rowdy Piper. But he really showed how he can put something in the, especially in a lead role. I think They Live is one of the more interesting ones where you didn't expect that from a wrestler, did you?
No, not at all. That was a pleasant surprise. And it really shows that John Carpenter really can see something in someone, you know, and Roddy Piper was great, obviously, as the wrestler, but he also had a great role in Highlander, the television series too. I remember that role well, but yeah, I mean, that particular movie was definitely, I think, his shining moment.
Oh, without a doubt. Well, let's go back to one of the more, you know, I think interesting ones to start off with. Obviously we had Dark Star, which is very, very interesting science fiction film, which in some ways set the pace for films like Alien, you know, down the lines. Of course, Dan O'Bannon working on that one as well. But one of the interesting things after that he did was Assault on Precinct 13, which I watched again recently, and I was pleasantly surprised how it holds up.
Yeah, it's also strangely eerie and still very scary to see. And was recently watching the first few episodes of the new Punisher, season two, with John Barenthal. And there is an episode where he is held up in a police station while these fanatics are trying to get someone in there and kill everyone else. And to me, it was a direct throwback to Assault on Precinct 13. Because there's some really scary images from that original film. And I think it still holds up. The sequel was good too, but I still prefer the original. The original one to me was just a little too scary and disturbing to a certain degree.
Mm. I think there's something very claustrophobic about that story itself. And that's what makes it so you think you're in a safe place, especially in a precinct, you know, like that you're going to be able to get away with it. But, and again, that plays on the fears of the characters and then us, our fears as we watch it too. So I always thought that was an interesting film. But of course, that led to him then moving on to some really interesting ones and, of course, partnering with the one, the only, Kurt Russell with the Escape films, where I think was one of the more interesting eras with Snake Plissken. Call me Snake. And I mean, did you enjoy that first Escape from New York? The first
absolutely loved it. Another very, very distinctive music score by John Carpenter as well, and was able to set a very dystopian future, but not really without really showing you the rest of the world outside of the walled up New York, you know. And, you know, did it take place like in 1997 or something crazy like that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know, which when it came out originally, it's like, oh my God, that seems so scary. But, yeah, I absolutely love that. And the iconic character of Snake Plissken, yet another great cast as well. Adrian Barbeau.
Oh.
Donald Pleasance, of course, the cabbie as well. I mean, everyone in there is
cabbie,
just
yep.
Great. You know, and I just love that film for so many reasons. It still holds up.
It is. It's a very eerie film as well. I think the atmosphere of that film, for me, puts the film right up there with Blade Runner in terms of one that probably doesn't have the biggest budget in the world, but they push that budget so far, you feel it.
Yep.
And call me Snake. Interesting that Kurt turned that, looked at that role and find out this guy is like a gunslinger. So who do you base that performance off? And of course, it's Eastwood.
I tell you, if anything deserves a prequel, I think a Snake Plissken prequel definitely deserves to be told. You know, you want to hear about his military background. You want to find out how he lost his eye. And just, you know, how he became the hardened killer / soldier he is, you know.
He really is a mercenary. And I think
Lee Van Cleef, too, is in that. I forgot. Ernest Borgnine, of course. Isaac Hayes. Harry Dean Stanton. Yeah, just great cast.
What's interesting about even Lee Van Cleef of that period he was going into the master with Shokusugi, and really having a big revival. I mean, that was his, and he not young too. Like he was would have been pushing late 60s. I think.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
You know, but came at a time where yeah, he was doing a lot of stuff in the 80s then too. But I would put that right up. But I think the interesting thing about his partnership with Kurt there, it really started to see that these guys trusted each other, and then we have films like
Kurt was his muse, man.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like Scorsese and De Niro, you know.
Yeah. Scorsese and Leonardo.
Yeah, yeah, with DiCaprio. Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Now, of course, they partnered for a series of films, and the next one coming up was, I think, personally my favorite, which is, of course, The Thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you. I'm not a huge horror fan, so I never saw this right away. It wasn't until years later I finally saw it, and it's good, but it's not my thing personally. I know a lot of people are going to go, "What, Kevin? You're lame. You're stupid." it's an interesting take on the alien kind of monster thing, and it's definitely scary. It still holds up. It still is unnerving to watch. To me, it's a little too claustrophobic. But I can tell you right now, there seems like, when it comes to those type of movies, I think it set a precedence on how you do it right.
Oh yeah.
Cause there's been so many imitators of that since then.
Oh, there has. And I mean, the movie itself too. I mean, there was, I think in 2003 or 2004, Xbox came along and said, "Hey, we're going to do a sequel to The Thing." And it literally goes hand in hand. So you could literally do the prequel, which came out in 2011, watch the original, and then play the game.
Oh, okay.
Got a sequence all the way through. Very popular out here in Australia, that was. But I think the biggest thing about it is you really need to know whether is MacReady the thing at the end.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know. I don't want to watch it again. It's scary, okay? There we go.
It is. And of course, I think the biggest one is one of your favorites, one of the greatest action comedies ever made. And that is, of course, a big influence on the new Monkey King, which is out here now, folks. Go and check it out on Netflix. The Australian made, but made in New Zealand. It's funny that. Called The Legend of Monkey from Netflix. But anyway, this one is, of course, Big Trouble in Little China, also based off Zoo Warriors, which is a famous Yuen Biao Chinese Hong Kong action film. So what are your thoughts on the life of Jack Burton?
Oh, it's such a fun movie. It's one of those two I kind of caught on to late. I didn't see it in the theater when it came out. I ended up watching it on VHS later on. And it's just a fun adventure flick with a great hero. To quote Norm, he's just a guy. You know, he doesn't have any special force background. He doesn't know any karate. He kind of gets by on his wits. He's just a guy, you know. And it's another great cast. It's just a lot of fun. And definitely one of the best that Carpenter, of course, has done, of course, with Kurt Russell.
Oh, without a doubt. I think, too, it's the characters in this. I mean, even the bad guy, James Hong in this, is playing
James a character. James is a freaking legend. That guy's just awesome.
I mean, we're talking about, a guy who, once you actually find out who he is, you're kind of like, hey, he's not bad. You know, he goes, "You're not on this world to get it, Mr. Burton." You know, like, dude, it's awesome. Like, how can you hate that guy, even though he's the bad guy? And yep. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. The amazing, mystical Egg Shen. One of the greatest characters out there, I think. Again, a lot of these characters, you hope there was a sequel so we could actually see them do something, you know, like move on to maybe, you know, Big Trouble in Little Russia. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. It could have been a big franchise, but they never really pushed it. And I think that was one of the,
I would love if they returned to Little, you know, China and done that. Because there's just more to go on there, you know. That,
oh yeah,
there's just more to happen down there, and I would love to see that.
Oh, without a doubt. Of course, that was hotly followed down the road with one without Russell, of course, and this is actually one of my favorites. I know it's Macca's, or at least one of his favorites for John Carpenter. And that's, of course, They Live with Keith David and, of course, Roddy Piper.
love that movie so much. It was a great social commentary as well about reading everything that you see. And I love the fact that aliens were to, you know, come in undercover and kind of manipulate humans that way. And of course, one of the best fist fight scenes of all time. It just goes on and on and on and on.
Put on the glasses.
Yeah, I know. I love that so much. Yeah. What a great film. And, you know, and you and Blair are talking, it's like the good guy dies at the end, you know, and you don't, yeah, something you don't normally see. But I would love to see them revisit that as well. Obviously you can't have Piper back, but you know, you could still have that world and those aliens and stuff like that. So,
well, Meg Foster lives, so you could tie that in and the aliens possibly, but maybe a Statham one.
Oh yeah.
You always do Statham. What's interesting too is his next film was not for another 4 years, but Chevy Chase and Richard Epcar, Memoirs of an Invisible Man, which I had to go and watch again after I heard Richard was in. And of course, folks, Richard soon is going to be on the show to chat about that and his work with John Carpenter here on this here show.
So that's going to be fascinating. I have actually never seen that movie. I remember seeing it in video stores, but I never got around to seeing it. But I'm kind of curious.
And the thing is interesting is that Chevy, I know from, Memoirs was on the tail end of his popularity as he started to move into, smaller comedies and stuff like that. But, you know, I remember from Fletch. I mean, Fletch was the big ones out here. That, yep. And, of course, the Vacation films. But, Richard's in that film, so we're going to have a look at that too. But, I mean, yeah, I think even for John, John was working down into, like, we also had Vampires with, of course, a great character group in that one too. Of course, James Wood's leading that one and one of the Baldwin brothers.
Yeah, James Wood, I like James Wood almost everything that he's done, and he always commands his role. I liked him as Jack Crow. I think he was good in that. Daniel Baldwin, he's all right. He always seems to play kind of sleazier guys and stuff. But I actually like those. I know a lot of people kind of panned it, but I actually thought it was a good movie.
And, of course, I think that had a sequel too, if I remember right, called Los Muertos or something like that.
I think so.
From what I remember, it wasn't real good. I do remember that one.
The next movie I will not defend, though.
Oh, are we talking about In the Mouth of Madness?
No.
Village of the Damned?
No.
Oh, Ghosts of Mars?
Yes, I will not defend that one. That one was bad.
Yeah. That's pretty bad.
I really wanted to like this movie because I remember the trailers looked really good. You had Ice Cube, Jason Statham, Natasha Henstridge, Pam Grier. You had a good cast going into this, but it was just bad. I like the concept of them going to Mars with these vampires or whatever you want to call them, but he missed the ball on that one. I think he kind of mailed that one in.
Yeah, I kind of think that it wasn't even so much the story. It was just the production itself, I don't think, was on par with any of these greats.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's interesting. You know, you've got some big ones where could have just had some sequels, and he chooses to do a vampire sequel. That was kind of weak. And that, and, of course, I suppose, let's talk about it, Escape from L.A.
I will defend that one. Yes, it is not as good as the original. It's more campy. There's more humor in it, but it's still Snake Plissken, Peter Fonda. You've got Steve Buscemi in it, Stacy Keach, Pam Grier, Bruce Campbell. I mean, and Michelle Forbes too, which I liked. It's not a good movie, but for some reason, I still enjoy it. I still get my Snake Plissken out of it. I like the fact that it was in L.A. Me growing up near L.A., I thought it was kind of funny, especially all the L.A. references to it. Yes, it's a bad movie, but I will say it's – I'm not going to say it's so bad it's good. I don't think it's gotten that type of, you know, feel to it, but I liked it. I really did. So,
Yeah, I've always thought this film is, again, hand in hand with the other films. It's quite a great film, but it's also a little more polished. And I think maybe sometimes it doesn't need as much polish.
That's an excellent point, actually. You know, I wish it would have come out sooner as well, to where you didn't have that polish. And I think that's an excellent point you made there, because you don't really need to over budget that thing. You could have done a smaller budget on it. You could have done, you know, what you did with Escape from New York. But that's what they do with sequels. You get a ton of money thrown into it and you get to explode up. But then sometimes you forget that, you know, either the story or the script or whatever will get missed, you know, and there's just too much put into the sets and special effects and stuff like that. And it was kind of missing that type of, you know, you were afraid to go to New York. Here in LA, you didn't really make it as scary as in going to New York, you know? So, but I like the fact how they told how California got divided with the earthquakes and everything like that. I thought that was being, so being from Southern California, that's probably why I defended it.
What's interesting about that film as well is the polish of the characters as well. Snake, if you look at what he looked like in New York, which I thought the costume design, just on Snake, was spot on. But now we get this polished version, which I think if you had Billy Zane watching this and he was the character from Sniper, you'd be like, yeah, look, it's Gucci Flage.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he still looked cool. You know, he had the cool jacket and stuff, but that would be the least of things that I would pick apart of that film.
Oh, definitely. I do like the tone. The tone was right. It especially the early part of the film, Buscemi coming in as kind of like the cabbie, basically playing that sort of role that cabbie was.
If I were to pick one thing apart, I thought they tried to put too much, like some of the humor seemed forced.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, it's not the greatest, but I think, you know, hand in hand with the other film, they got the at least the tone right. Now, there is one that I actually haven't seen out here in Australia yet, and I did want to get your thoughts on this. That is, of course, Prince of Darkness.
Another movie I didn't see because of the subject. It fell under that horror thing I have not seen. Okay. Yeah, it's one I really don't have an interest in seeing, but I think one that we have not touched on that seems very un... If I were to say of all of these films, which one seems the most un-John Carpenter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, well, wouldn't it?
That would be Starman.
Wow, yeah. Oh, you've nailed it. That is quite a commercial film.
Yeah, and it was a great story. It's more like a love story, you know? And it threw me for a loop. I mean, I remember seeing this in the theater, actually. But I didn't know it was a John Carpenter film at the time. And this was before I was becoming really kind of fluent with his style and movies in general. So I didn't really catch the, you know, the John Carpenter isms in it. I remember wanting to see it more because of Karen Allen was in it because of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a great story, and it's a very underrated film, and Jeff Bridges was fantastic in this. And I think that a lot of people forget this was a John Carpenter film.
It really was. And I mean, he's also known for his screenplays. Yep. There's a film called Black Moon Rising. If you haven't seen that, go and check it out. Directed by Harley Cochlis. And this is one of the stronger Tommy Lee Jones performances before he really hit it.
What was it called again?
It's called Black Moon Rising.
Oh, I did see that years ago. I remember that. I remember liking it. I don't know if I ever got it on video, but I remember renting it. That's right. I think I rented it after I saw The Fugitive, and I was kind of on a Tommy Lee Jones kind of kick. I wanted to see what else that he did. I didn't realize that was a Carpenter scripted film. Is that what you're saying it was?
It is, yeah. And, of course, starring also Linda Hamilton and, of course, yep, Magnificent Seven's Robert Vaughn.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, again, he's done a lot of those where, you know, he might come along and just do the script of a film. Of course, he's got a number of scripts that have also been copied. And
oh, yeah.
Really, I mean, Halloween, perfect example.
Yep.
And, again, I'm not a massive horror fan, to be perfectly honest. I think they've all been... the same film.
For that Halloween movie, even though it's not my genre and I've seen it, the Halloween movie really, like you said, it's been copied. That type of feel for a horror film has been copied so many ways. And it really set a precedent on how you do horror films correctly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
Whether it's, it was a good example of less is more suspense. I mean, obviously you got your gore, you know, you got your deaths and stuff, but there was not as much as you think you would expect from a film like that because of how tense that film made you feel.
Yeah, I think it's very much like the Jaws idea of, you know, less is more, and the suspense of, are we going to see something? Are we going to, you know, see the act? But also the fact that too is, it's a little bit like Edwick's Glory.
Yeah,
it's not really a bloodthirsty movie at all, but that first opening shot of the cannonball and, you know, taking out a head, it sets a pace. If you set a pace like John Carpenter does, that's the secret of those films. But out of those 80s batch, what is your favorite of the Carpenter films?
I'll give you my top three.
Here we go.
Okay. At number three is Big Trouble in Little China, for the reasons that we spoke of. And that movie still holds up too, I think. Number two is They Live. That movie has grown on me so much over the years. I actually have a copy of They Live, a DVD copy, signed by Roddy Piper. So I'm very proud of that.
Wow.
Yeah, I met him at a G.I. Joe convention many years ago, and I had him sign that for me. And number one is, of course, Escape from New York. Never get tired of watching that. And yeah, a couple of honorable mentions. I'm going to throw in Assault on Precinct 13, and probably I have to look at rewatchability. Probably either Starman or Escape from L.A. I enjoy Escape from L.A. So yeah, I'm going to throw that in there.
Yeah, it's. I think it's heading to that Flash Gordon territory. You know, it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't deny really that. I know it's going to be. You know, so yeah.
The characters are like that. You know, they are that sort of likable sort of area, and of course, was it James Keach? Or no, Stacy Keach.
Stacy Keach.
Yeah, an interesting role in that one too.
I had to double check to see if Escape from LA was rated R, and it is. I was wondering if it was one of those they kind of wanted to get a bigger audience, so they went to PG-13, but apparently it is rated R. So
I don't know why it would be, like, even out here, I don't think it was MA-15 plus restricted, which is that version out here, you know, of R. So interesting. It's great to see your love of these films too. Now, very soon on another show, you're going to be covering one of the great Sam Raimi films. That is, of course, The Quick and the Dead.
Yeah, this was a special request from our friend of the show, Alex Autry. We wanted to get him in on a pick to choose his Couch Potato Theater. And of course, Couch Potato Theater is our podcast where we look at old cult classic and film favorites that have stood the test of time and are special in one reason or another. And we try to target films that aren't these huge, big blockbusters, even though they may have done well in the theater, but, you know, that still stand the test of time, or maybe deserve a little extra love that they haven't got, that people don't talk about much. And Sam Raimi's version of The Quick and the Dead, starring Sharon Stone and Gene Hackman, was definitely a qualifier for this. We're going to talk about this more, but I really enjoyed Gene Hackman's role as the main villain in this even more than Unforgiven, because he's nastier in this one.
Yeah, he is. And we get quite a good ensemble cast in this.
Yeah, and Sharon's, we'll touch on the topic of, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio films, are they better when he dies?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I think one of the great things about this is on the spur of Russell Crowe hitting that stride, you know, and I think he's the strongest element in the movie, to be honest.
He's definitely one of them. We'll debate that. That was another film that had a great set of characters in it.
Oh, without a doubt. And Sam Elliott, of course, too. Great in that.
Sam Elliott? No, he's not in that one.
No, he's not.
Oh, you're talking about the other Quick and the Dead.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Yes, I'm actually going to watch that. You brought that to my attention today. I'm actually going to be watching that that version, which I came out. I think it was a TV movie that came out in '87, based on one of the stories by The Quick and the Dead by Louis L'Amour, who's a famed Western author that I first found out about through my dad, because my dad read a lot of his books. So I'm curious to see if he actually read that one. I got to call him and find out, because he has a lot of his books.
Now, of course, Sam Elliott did a number of the Louis L'Amour books, Sackets, did all those sorts of ones. And you know, again, one of those greats where you can just throw him in a movie and he goes, oh, here he goes again. And of course, just takes over the film. I mean, he is the master of tombstones.
I think he really found, Sam Elliott, I think, really found a genre in the Westerns. But one of my favorites came out after RoboCop with his co-star Peter Weller in Shakedown, which I think had a different name in Australia, Blue Jean Cop. Is that right?
Blue Jean Cop. And it's a great film.
Yeah, it is. Great buddy cop film where Sam's a rugged police officer dealing with police corruption, and Peter Weller is a lawyer, I think, and they're trying to weed out a lot of crooked police officers.
Oh, without a doubt. Well, the thing is, Sam Elliott's on a bit of a rise now with A Star Is Born, possible awards talk, and also another action movie on the way.
Yeah, I saw this. The guy that killed, Hitler and Bigfoot or something crazy like
that? That's right. That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for that. I got to check that out. Is it on Netflix or something? What is it on?
I'm not sure. Like, I don't know where it's releasing. I just saw the trailer, and straight away.
I'm in.
If it's Sam Elliott taking on Hitler, I'm going to bring it. Yeah. Yeah. Just amazing. So I want to thank Kev for being on the show today and spreading his love of John Carpenter, and really looking forward to it too. Seeing what he's going to be doing with his love of Sam Raimi's The Quick and the Dead soon on Culture Clash. But where can people find you on the web, man?
Oh, of course, you can find me on the Fandom Podcast Network there. fpnet.podbean.com, of course, is our master feed. And you can find me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. And, of course, if you know me, I'm also on Facebook. So, thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. Also, Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we discuss all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating the cult classic and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. The End Zone, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Discoville, a Star Trek Discovery and the Orville podcast. The Hair Metal podcast, if you're a hard rock music fan, the Hair Metal podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, as we discuss all things Doctor Who, past and present. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Master Feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network. On Instagram, we are at Fandom Podcast Network. And on Twitter, at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and support the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.